Now, our plan coming out of the Summer Baptism Festival was to go into a new series called Next. Listen, we're really excited about some things right now. We feel like God's doing something very unique in the midst of our community. He's kind of positioning us to take some steps that we're really pumped about and ready to share with the rest of the community. And so we're going to spend 3 weeks talking about some of the next steps that we think God is leading us toward. And we've been really excited about it. Here's the thing. Scott got so excited about it that his appendix exploded Friday night in the middle of the night. And it didn't actually explode, but it is seriously, he had to have his appendix taken out about, I don't know, 4 in the morning, Friday night. And so, poor widow Scotty, he's, you know, I had that done, and I was like, walk it off, it'll be fine. But, you know, I actually took mine out myself, but it's, you know, you can learn a lot on Google, really. I mean, but anyway, so the bottom line is, this series is so important to us that we decided to push it back a week because Scott's got some fantastic things to share, and we didn't want to miss a beat. And so, about 12:45 on Friday night, I found out I'm going to get to share and hang out with you guys and talk. So today, you're stuck with me, all right? All right. So, thank you. Let's just wait till the end and see if you still do that. So here's the deal. Today, we're going to do a little bit different kind of a talk. And I'm going to talk about something that I've actually talked about here before. It's something that I'm really, really passionate about. And it has to do with one of our core values, which is the value of story. Say that with me. Story. What? Are you guys asleep? Here we go. Story. Story. It's one of our core values. And I have sort of this belief that as humans, for whatever reason, we often minimize the value of our own story. I think that for whatever reason, we look at every other story out there, and we read other stories, and we hear people share their story, and we just sort of think, well, my story kind of stinks. But I think that story is a gift from God, and I want to talk about it a little bit. And I've taught on this before, and so some of this is going to be familiar, but this is my favorite story from all of the scriptures, and so I just want to walk through it just for a second. It's found in 1 Samuel chapter 14, and it's a really amazing account where we find the nation of Israel has been at war with the Philistines. Now, the Philistines have been running all over them, and the nation of Israel has whittled themselves down to about 600 people. They're soldiers. They have 600 soldiers left. The Philistines have taken all of their weapons. The only thing Israel has, they have two swords among 600 people, and King Saul has one, and his son Jonathan has the other, and the Philistines are up on the top of this cliff, and they're sort of intimidating the Israelites, and the Israelites knew that they're kind of waiting for their own destruction, basically. I mean, there's 600 of us, we're about to get trounced. But what I really love about this story is that it's an amazing glance into a single moment in the life of Jonathan, the king's son. There's a lot of stories in the scriptures about Jonathan, but this particular one, it's like God has just put a laser focus on this moment so that we can learn not only about Jonathan's life, but so that we can find ourselves within the story as well. And so the story sort of opens with King Saul, who's the king of Israel, is laying under this pomegranate tree, and he's having a woe is me party, where he's, woe is me, everything stinks right now. And we've all been there, right, where it seems like the odds are really all stacked against us. We feel like there's no overcoming this. I am just a little fish in a big pond. What can I do? I've been there. I'm sure all of you have too. So Saul finds himself in that place. And the tough thing is, the scripture records the number of the Philistines like this, that the Philistines are on the top of this cliff, and their numbers were as the sands on a seashore. Translation, that's a lot of people, okay? A huge army. They're waiting up there. And so Saul just knows it's just a matter of time before they wipe us out. So Jonathan's sitting with his armor bearer. His armor bearer is a guy who holds his sword and holds his armor, kind of like his wingman. And Saul sees this opportunity as an opportunity to murmur and to complain. But Jonathan saw this moment as an opportunity to step through the door. There was a door right there, and he decided to open it and see what happens. And so he turns, and he looks at his armor bearer, and he says these words to his armor bearer. He says, come, let's go over to the outpost of those uncircumcised men. Stop. I've often wondered, like, how did Jonathan know that they were all, you know? Like, did he hire one of, like, those phone tree people to call them while they were eating dinner? Like, ring, hello, Philistine camp. Yeah, yes, sir. A quick survey. What percentage would you say your men are uncircumcised?
That'd be all. Thank you. Click.
You know, I don't know how he knew, but that's not the important part of the story. So just showing you, there are always interesting little details. We should wrestle with the text, people, on questions like that. But the next verse, seriously, is a verse that has really impacted my life for the last 5 or 6 years. It's one of my favorite verses in all of the scriptures. It's verse 6, and it says this, "Perhaps the Lord will act on our behalf." Would you say that with me? Perhaps the Lord will act on our behalf. Man, I've found lots of moments in my life where I've sort of felt like my back was against a wall. And I've never said, "Perhaps the Lord will act." I've always said, "Please, God, you know, act on my behalf. I need your help." Jonathan says, "Perhaps the Lord will act on our behalf." And he looks at his armor bearer and he says, "Look, we're going to get killed no matter what. So let's go see what God might do. So let's go out and let's show ourselves to these Philistines. And if they ask us to stay where we are and come down, well, that's a sign they're getting ready to come down and have us for dinner. That's not a lot of fun. But if they say, 'Hey, come up to us,' then that will be the sign that God has delivered them into our hands." And the armor bearer, who obviously was on something, he says, "Hey, whatever's in your heart to do, let's do it." You know, I would have been like, "Hey, I'm out of here. I'm going to find the food truck on the other side of the world, okay? I'm not hanging out to do this." Jonathan says, "No, let's do it." And they did. Jonathan found himself at a critical moment in his life, a moment with uncertainty, a moment that was pregnant with possibility, where he could step out and reveal himself to these people and could see God show up in a way that he couldn't fabricate. That's pretty amazing. And so Jonathan steps up and he turns that knob and he flings the door open and he jumps through it and he presents himself to these Philistines. And the scriptures in this account record for us that the Philistines started making fun of them and said, "Oh, look at those dogs have come out of their little burrows. They're coming out here. Why don't you guys come up to us and greet us so we can have you for dinner?" And Jonathan looked at his armor bearer and basically said, "This is the sign that the Lord has delivered them onto our behalf." And what's amazing is Jonathan and his armor bearer, they ascended this cliff. And they got to the top of the cliff, and God at that time sent an earthquake, and it caused confusion among all of the Philistine camp. And Jonathan and his armor bearer started kicking tail and taking names, and it scared the whole army. They thought a massive army was invading them, and they bailed. They were gone. And that's pretty amazing. That was a defining moment for Jonathan. Now, I don't know about you, but when I read a story like this, it's often not easy for me to relate. I mean, I've never been in a situation quite like that, you know? I've never had my back quite up against the wall. The closest I think I've come is when I lived in Texas, and there were these hideous monsters that live in Texas. They're beasts. They're wild. They are, man, they're ferocious, and they're called fire ants. And they breed, and they make bazillions of them. And if you ever get eaten by them, I mean, it is awful. It is hell on earth, okay? It's like in the movies where you see, like, just this, like, group of fire ants, like, going along, and if you're in their path, they just go right on past you, and there's just your bones laying behind. That's really the only kind of beast army I've had to face. But I just sprayed them, and then you know what happened after that. So that's, like, the only thing. But I think it's so easy for us to see the stories of other people from the scriptures and think that they somehow had been like drinking kryptonite tea or something, and that they were these superhero people, but they weren't. They were people just like you and me. People who were too stupid at the time to know how crazy they were being. I think Jonathan probably wasn't, "Well, I need to handle this appropriately so people millennia from now will be able to navigate properly." I don't think he was doing that. I think he was responding to a moment that was presented to him. And we have the advantage of hindsight to look at that and go, "Wow, that was a defining moment in the life of Jonathan." And I can't tell you how many times I sit and listen to people who tell me how their life just doesn't compare to that other person. You know, we all know those people that their life is just a nonstop string of exciting events, right? Everything just always seems to work out for them. They always get the right job, and they close on their house, and everything's great, and all this sort of stuff. And then there's the rest of us that go, "Man, I have a real hard time relating to that," right? Are you with me? Or how often do I have to meet with people who they feel like, "Well, my life's just really insignificant because I haven't been a missionary in Zimbabwe, or I didn't do this thing, or I haven't eradicated poverty or world hunger, and I just haven't done anything significant." And what you're doing is you're comparing to the person next to you. And guess what? That's the person next to you. It's not you. And so what I've come to know is that our lives are made up of a string of defining moments. I really have this belief that if we all just sort of pause and went to 30,000 foot view of our life, we could pick a handful of key moments, five or six moments like the one in Jonathan's life that really define who we are. And when we do those, we can look back on those and get a very clear picture of who I am and what made me the person that I am today. And knowing who I am and what's made me this way helps me navigate into the future. Listen, all of us have stories with defining moments, every single person. Some of those moments are really beautiful. Some of those moments are really amazing. Some of those moments are also really painful, but when you put them all together, they make up who you and I are. Moments are powerful. Irwin McManus, in his book, one of my favorite books of all time, is called Chasing Daylight. He asks this question: if you could capture one moment in your life, what would it be? Think about that. If you could somehow take a moment from your past and kind of bottle it up and hold it close, okay? And then anytime you want, you could open that lid and breathe a little of the fragrance of it, and you would relive those memories over and over again. What would that be? You know, for some of us, maybe it's the birth of our child, or it's the day we got married, or it's the day we got that amazing job or job promotion, or we got to go on the amazing honeymoon or the amazing trip to another part of the world. You know, for some of us, that moment would be going back and spending a minute or two with someone that we really, really love who's not with us anymore. We all have different ideas of what that moment would be, but that's a way of helping you see how important moments are. There are moments that stick with you. Isn't it amazing how if you hear a song sometimes, it spurs a memory of where you were the last time you heard that song and what you were doing? Or if a certain smell brings to mind, oh, even the memory of an era or of a season in your life. Because our lives are summed up in a series of key moments. And if we think about it, we could realize there are five to six key moments probably that define who we are and what our story is all about. And a lot of times, those moments involve relationships, maybe a change in a relationship or, you know, taking a step like getting engaged or a hard breakup or losing someone that we love. You know, other times, those key moments that define our lives are a result of a decision that we made, a choice to start that business or to go to that place and do this thing or to say no to someone or to grab the door handle and shut the door in your life forever. And sometimes we choose those defining moments in our lives, and sometimes those moments choose us, where this thing happened and it kind of rattled us to our core. And 20 years later, we're still looking back on that as, that was a pretty big defining moment for me. But here's the thing. I think God's given us a framework to understand ourselves and to understand other people. And it all has to do with this value of story. One of the greatest gifts God gave us was the ability to articulate how we feel and what happened and what we understand and know through the form of narrative. That's why I love movies so much. It takes me on this emotional roller coaster when I watch something. That's why I love sitting down with people and hearing, like, what's your story? What are the things that happened that made you who you are? Tell me about yourself. God gave that to us as a gift, as a way of expressing those things deep in our heart to other people. It's sort of giving skin on the bones of I feel. And sharing our story has this remarkable ability to help us connect with other people at a really deep level. When you think about it, the people that you have the most compassion toward, the people that you're most invested in, those are probably the people that you know the most about their story. They've shared their story. They've been real with you. You're not playing the game of, I wonder what's really going on behind the surface with that person, because they're being honest with you. Story, truth story, involves vulnerability. And I think that one of the hardest challenges for us as humans is understanding our own story, because we have a tendency to compare our story to other people's story and, for whatever reason, to minimize it. A few years ago, I taught on this concept to 30 or 40 leaders here in our community, and I shared about this story about Saul and Jonathan and sort of this pinnacle moment in Jonathan's life. And I sort of shared with them this idea that I think you could sum up your life in a handful of defining moments. I mean, what if you paused and said, over a 3 or 4 minute period, you really reflected and went, okay, here are probably the 5 or 6 key moments in my life that make me who I am. Those decisions that I made or the relationships I was in that had a shift, or those handful of things that happened to me or that I did that have really made me who I am. And so what I did is I invited them to at a table for 3 or 4 minutes. I gave them a little index card, and I said, I want you to write on there 1 through 5 or 6, and I want you just to get quiet and just think about your life and figure out what are those things that really make you who you are. And so they did that. And then I said, I want to take this to the next level. I want you to get in groups of 2 or 3 people around your table. And what I want you to do is I want you, in 60 to 90 seconds, each of you, take turns sharing your story. This is me in 5 or 6 key moments. And then I went to the bathroom. And then I came back. And when I came back, I was blown away at what happened in the room. Like, everyone was talking. Everyone was leaning in. People were listening. They were really hearing one another. And it was amazing. I've been in so many conversations where people are telling me their story. And at like hour two, I'm like, hey, Cliff Notes version, dude. Seriously, like, you're cool and all, but you're wearing me out, and I need to go see my therapist after listening to this. There's got to be a quicker way. And so what happened is I saw people in like 2 or 3 minutes or 4 minutes share the basic essentials of what made them who they are. It was really powerful to see that. And a couple of things sort of spoke to me. One thing is I realized that every single person's story matters. Did you know that? Listen, I spent a good part of my life thinking my story didn't matter to anybody. It didn't even really matter to me. God started showing me that all that collage of stuff that comes together to make me who I am, that's actually really important. Especially when it comes to pain and the things that are cause scars. You know, we have a tendency as humans, I think, sometimes to go, well, I got to forget about the pain. But that just won't happen, will it? It's not true. That's not wise. Life is really painful sometimes. But God takes all of that and puts that together, and it makes us who we are. And so now when I look at the scars on my elbow or my finger or all over my body from all kinds of things that have happened in my life, I embrace those because those are who I am. They're a part of my story. They're markers that tell the truth about who I am. Your story, it matters. It might be different than my story. Yours is going to look different than mine. And my story is different than Jonathan's. And Jonathan's is different from, you know, David's and all these different things. But your story matters. You have your defining moments in your life just as I do. And they all add up to equaling you. But one other thing that I learned is that this was a really easy way. It's kind of a tool to help people get to know one another. And it's just sort of in a concise way share their story with one another. And so what I'm going to do is I'm going to share my story this morning. And some of you have already heard it, and that's okay, but some of you haven't. I'm going to take a little longer than I would if I were just sitting one-on-one in a quick thing, but it's going to be quick. I have 6 words that describe my story. What I ended up doing was I was able to write my story like this. Like, think about it like this. This was a moment, so I would say in one sentence, this thing happened to me, and here's how it affected me. That's that simple, right? This thing happened. Here's what it did to me. So, cause, effect, get it? I was able to sort of take that one sentence and work it down to one word. I don't think that's everybody should do that. That's just something I did. So I'm going to give you 6 words that tell the story of me. I'm going to try to go really fast, so buckle your seatbelt. Let's go. First word is tragedy. My life began in tragedy when 5 days before I was born, my father got killed in a car accident. And, you know, that thrust my family into a really awful place. My mom was 21 years old. She had a 4-year-old daughter, a newborn baby, and buried her son, or her husband. That was really tough. And it launched her into years and years of depression and hurt, as you can imagine, which, of course, in turn, made my sister and I's lives living hell at times. So I grew up in a pretty rough childhood. So the first 10 years of my life, tragedy. Second word is redemption. When I was about 10, this elderly couple down the road, they came to me and they said, hey, you want to go to church with us? We go to this little rural Baptist church in the middle of Missouri. And I said, absolutely. I'll go anywhere to get out of the house. And I went with this couple. And I started hearing the pastor talking about Jesus. And I didn't know a lot about Jesus at that time. But he started just telling us about how Jesus really cared about us. That Jesus valued us as unique human beings. That Jesus really cared individually about us, and he cared about people. And I responded to that, and I went, man, this Jesus, there's something about this that's right. And I made a decision, you know what? I want to follow this Jesus. He does care about me. And I went through all of my teen years knowing that he cared about me. I didn't go to church a lot, but I knew about Jesus, and I read my Bible some, and I saw that as a pivotal moment in my life. The third word is decision. 3 days before I turned 17, my mom and I got in this real big fight, and she kicked me out of the house. And I had to make a choice. What am I going to do? I was going to go either work or go live with my grandma and finish high school. I chose to go live with my grandma. And a few months later, she was like real religious. You know, she talked about Jesus all the time. And I was like, oh, God, you know, he's talking about Jesus. And like, I believe in Jesus, and like, I want to follow him. But why do you have to talk about him that much? And she had all these books, you know, about Jesus. And I was like, well, yeah. You know, why are you doing this? You don't need all of these books about Jesus. I mean, you got the Bible. What else do you need? So then I started dating this girl named Cookie. And, you know, I should have known based on her name that she was trouble. And listen, if your name, first name or middle is Cookie, I'm sure you're an amazingly wonderful person. She was not so much. And she started asking me to do all these things that I felt like, that's not me, man. Like, this little voice saying, I don't think that's what following Jesus looks like. And so one night, I got on the phone with Cookie, her real name, by the way, and my grandma had this like old yellow phone in her kitchen that had, you know, like the 50-foot cable, that was like the little curly thing, and it would always get tangled up and funky or whatever. So I got that thing, and I stretched it like as far as I could, and I was laying on the floor of the dining room, and I was talking to her, and I just said, you know, I'm feeling something here that I'm going to have to listen to and respond to. And that is that, you know, when I was 10, I sort of came to this moment of going, I'm going to choose to follow Jesus, but I haven't really been doing that. And this relationship is reminding me that that's something that's really important to me, and that I've decided at 17 that I'm going to do this. And I'm really going to explore what it means to follow Jesus. I'm really going to try to follow Jesus with my life. And I would really like it if you would do that as well. And she very quickly hung up the phone, and that was it. So I was kind of on my own. My next word, fast forward, is the word commitment. I got married when I was 20 years old. That was 4.5 years ago. And roughly, I don't always get that right, but that's pretty young to get married. I grew up in an extremely dysfunctional house. My wife was a pastor's daughter, an only child, great family, great extended family. Everything was great. So you can imagine we had a wonderful marriage the first couple of years as we tried to explore, like, how do you live together and get along with each other? And God bless her for putting up with me. That was commitment. And I had to work my way through that. And I'm glad, honestly, I'm really celebrated. We just had our 15th anniversary. No, is that right? Yeah, 15th anniversary, so thank us. Yeah. So, she's raising me right, and I appreciate it. She is older than me, and I got an older lady, so yes, all right. The next word for me is responsibility. When I was 23, my son was born, my oldest son, and man, that was one of the scariest days of my life. And I realize for every parent, it's scary being a parent, but when you grew up in a home like I did, I was really worried that I was going to mess him up. You know, I'm sure every parent feels this, right? Don't we all feel like, no matter how old our kids are, we're worried that we're going to mess their lives up. And you know, who knows? I guess it remains to be seen. But so far, I think my kids are doing pretty well. Annette has done a really great job at raising them as well. So you guys will get that tomorrow. Okay. The last word is the word transition. About 5 years ago, I was at home, and Scott Hodge gave me a call end of May. And said, hey, man, what do you think about working together, you know? And I kind of thought about it in the past. I thought someday, you know, it'd be really fun to get together and work together. But not then. I was in the middle of a great job. I had a wonderful situation, one I would just never want to leave. I just bought a house a few months before. And so I just kind of ignored him for a few months. And then in August, I think it was, of that year, he said, hey, one of our staff left, and I really need someone. Would you consider coming? And all of a sudden, I was like, oh, man, I really got to make a decision now. And so we prayed about it for weeks and finally got to this place where it was like, you know what? The kind of life that I want to live is a life that I want my kids to observe, a life of someone who jumps through the unknown sometimes, the scariness of life. I heard a quote once that says, if you're not living on the edge, you're taking up too much space, which I think is a great quote. And I realized I was in, like, comfort land. And I didn't want that. I wanted my kids to see me going, well, what if I were to put myself in a position where perhaps the Lord will act on our behalf? I don't know what's going to happen. Who knows? But I only want to live that kind of life where I'm stepping into moments and saying, perhaps the Lord will act on our behalf. And that was 5 years ago. I want the rest of my life to be stepping into those moments where perhaps the Lord will act on my behalf. So I'm able to look at my life with those six words and recognize six pivotal things or moments that define who I am. Now, here's the really fun, uncomfortable part. Our welcome teams are going to come right now. They're going to give you those index cards, and they're going to pass them out here in just a second. They're little 3.5 by 5 index cards, and what I want you to do is I want you to take those index cards, and I want you to write on there 1 through 5, okay, and then six or 10, but probably not 10, more like 5 or 6, because if you're saying 10, you're getting a little bit too in-depth. And here's what I want you to do. I want you to think through these moments in your life. Go ahead and start thinking now. What are the handful of things that make me who I am? And I'm going to give you a question that is, what are the 5 or 6 defining moments that make up my life? What are those transformative moments that sort of launch the season of life for me? A relationship or a decision or whatever it's going to be. Go ahead and think about that for a couple of minutes, and then they're going to come and they're going to pass these cards down, and I want you to take what you're sorting in your brain out and put it on paper, and I want you to reflect just for 2 or 3 minutes. Don't talk to your neighbor. Don't talk to anyone else. I want you just to focus on what are these 5 or 6 key moments in your life. Here's the thing. One last thing I want you to do. I want you to take the card. I want you to flip it over to the back side. And for some of you, that means like unfolding it with the gum that you just stuck in the middle of the card. But hopefully for most everyone else, the backside of your card is empty. Our moments hopefully don't end with the last moment that we wrote on that card. We're always going to have other moments presented to us, other opportunities to capitalize on life, opportunities to make the best of life. And listen, there are going to be other moments that are going to happen to us. When people around us change, or when our, you know, when family members pass away, or whatever it looks like, we're going to have those moments. But what's beautiful is your card is still blank because your story is still being written. And so if you look at your life and the cumulative sum of those moments, and they equal to you something less than what you think they should, no big deal. Because your story is still being written, guys. You have an opportunity to walk out of this door with a mindset that says, I'm still writing the future. And yes, pain may have happened to me and tough things may have happened to me, but I have a choice about what tomorrow looks like and the day after that and the day after that, and I'm committing my life to living on the edge and saying, God, I'm ready to follow after you, whatever that looks like, and we're going to go through these moments together. And I think that's a really beautiful thing. So next week, we're going to start a new series, and we're going to explore some of the things that we think are defining moments in the life of our community that are coming next. That's next week, but today I want to close by just giving us a moment to reflect. I want to ask you, what does God want to do in you in this next season? And I'm going to ask everybody just to close your eyes and to forget the distractions of this room or of the day or whatever is going on in your mind, just take a deep breath. Let it out. And let the posture of your heart be open. You know, maybe for some people in this room right now, there's a door right in front of you that you know you're supposed to open and walk through, but you just don't have the courage to do it. Take these couple of minutes and talk to God about that. And ask God to guide you, to give you strength, to give you courage to step through the door. Or maybe you're like most people and you don't know what that next door or life moment might be. I'm going to ask you to take this time and ask God to help you be ready to embrace every single moment. You don't know what that thing is, so just be in a posture of readiness. God, help us live in a state of readiness, ready to step through whatever door you call us to. Let that be your voice. And then for all of us, let's also use this couple of minutes of reflection to look at a card that shows us a picture of the 5 or 6 things that make up our life and just give thanks to God for bringing us through those things. Some of those are painful. Some of those are hard. Some of those are the most glorious, joy-filled moments. Let's thank God for both, that he's been with us when it's been hard and he's been with us when it's been good. And every good gift comes from God. So whether you know what your next step is and you're afraid to go through it, or you don't know what it is and you need to be ready, or you just want to look at the card and just reflect and say, God, I give these moments to you. I surrender them to you. They're a part of my story. I embrace this. They make me who I am. Take this time with your eyes closed, with your posture toward God. We as a people just surrender our stories to you and just acknowledge that every part of us, every scar, every good moment, every bad, God, you use all of those things to make us who they are. And I pray that every single person in this room would walk away understanding that their story matters to you. Let us share our stories and live life together in community as we celebrate grace and the goodness of who you are. And as a people, we together said, amen.